King Louis the 16th, the last king of France.
I was very young and inexperienced when I became king. I wanted my people to be happy, but I didn't know how to give them what they needed. At the time of my death, the French Revolution was turning France into a completely different country. I was born on the 23rd of August, 1754, at the Palace of Versailles, approximately 20 kilometres away from the city of Paris. My full name was Louis Auguste, and I was given the title of Duc de Berry. I was the grandson of the King of France, King Louis XV of the House of Bourbon. My father, also called Louis, was the Dauphin of France. The Dauphin was the heir to the throne and was usually the oldest son of the king. And my mother was Marie-Joseph of Saxony. My parents weren't very interested in me, but they paid a lot of attention to my older brother, Louis, Duc de Bourgogne, who was next in line to the throne after my father. I was a healthy child, and I enjoyed hunting and other outdoor activities. From 1760, when I was 6 years old, my education was taken care of by a man called the Duc de la Vauguyon, and I was taught religion, astronomy, physics, history, and Latin by a number of aristocratic tutors. I was also good at modern languages and became quite fluent in Italian and English. Being heir to the throne of France was no protection against the often fatal diseases that surrounded us. In 1761, my brother became ill with a horrible but very common disease called tuberculosis, which affected the lungs and sometimes other parts of the body. Later that year, when he was 9 years old, he died. In 1765, my father died from the same illness. And 2 years later, my mother followed him to the grave, also because of tuberculosis. At the age of 9, I became the new Dauphin. When my grandfather died, I would become King of France. At the time, in Paris, the average life expectancy, the age when most people die, was 29. And so when I was 15, it was time for me to marry. Royalty and the aristocracy did not marry for love. Marriage was an agreement, a legal contract that would benefit the families or countries of both the bride and groom. It was arranged that I would marry a 14-year-old girl called Marie Antoinette, the Archduchess of Habsburg in Austria. She was the daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor Francis I and was also my second cousin. The House of Habsburg was one of the most important royal houses in Europe, and it was beneficial for them to have a daughter who was married to the future King of France. France had been at war with Prussia, and a marriage between our two countries was a way of ensuring peace. Neither Marie Antoinette nor I were actually present at our wedding. In May 1770, we were married by proxy, which meant that we each had a legal representative who took our place. I finally met Marie Antoinette when she came to live at Versailles. I liked her, but we were not very close, and our first child was not born until 8 years after our wedding. I had been very well educated in academic subjects, but I was very shy. Nobody had really taught me how to be charming or how to behave in a way that was socially acceptable. Until my brother died, nobody thought that I would be king. And my education had not covered any of the skills I would need. I didn't know how to talk about finance or politics, and I had no idea how to even begin any kind of negotiation. I was used to spending my days hunting in the grounds of Versailles or playing at my hobby, which was making and fixing locks. In 1774, when my grandfather died and I became king, I was totally unprepared. French society was divided into three groups called estates. The first estate consisted of priests and religious leaders. They controlled about 10% of the land, but were only 1% of the population. They were very wealthy and made most of their money from rents, which were collected from the people living and working on their land. As well as paying rent, these people had to pay a 10% tax on whatever profit they made from the land. The tax was officially for church expenses, but this was a phrase with many interpretations. There was no doubt that some of the money was spent on maintaining the expensive lifestyle of the members of the first estate. The second estate was the aristocracy, which made up 2% of the population. These people had inherited their land and lived mainly on the money paid to them in rent. They owned 25% of the land in France. The third estate was the rest of France, the 97% who had few rights and no political power, and therefore no hope of changing a situation which to them seemed extremely unfair. When I became king, I inherited a country which was deeply in debt and full of misery. We had fought in the Seven Years' War, 1756 to 1763, against Prussia and Britain, which had been very expensive, especially considering we were defeated. My grandfather and the kings before him had greatly overspent on expensive entertainment and luxurious lifestyles. France was an absolute monarchy, which meant that it was the king who had to make all the decisions and rule the country. This was unlike other places, Britain, for example, which had a government that was also responsible for passing laws. Even though my grandfather officially had all the power, he had many advisers who often managed to convince him to do what they wanted, instead of what was right and good for France. In spite of, or maybe because of my inexperience, I had great plans for my country and wanted to try to make it a fairer society. After I was crowned at the cathedral in Reims in 1774, I wanted to make several changes. France was a Catholic country, but I thought that people of other religions should be able to worship freely and have the same rights as Catholics. I also wanted to remove some of the taxes the poor had to pay and give them better civil rights. These proposed changes threatened both the church and the aristocracy, who tried successfully to prevent me from making them. The only effect my proposals had, in the end, was to make me unpopular, and my wife, too, was not well-liked. The people were suspicious of our marriage, because Marie Antoinette came from a Prussian background and we had been at war with Prussia not long before. She was also unpopular because she liked spending a great deal of money. Money that we did not have. In 1776, when the Americans declared their independence from the British, I supported them and sent French armies to help them fight. We had already been fighting the British in America with the help of American Indians for control of some of the territories there, and we were struggling to pay for our involvement. I knew that I was going to have difficulty organizing my country's finances, so I had made a man called Jean-Frédéric Philippot my chief advisor. It was his idea to borrow large amounts of money from other nations, which greatly added to our own country's debt. In 1778, our first daughter, Marie-Thérèse Charlotte, was born, followed 2 years later by our son, Louis-Joseph Xavier François. It was also the year in which American and French armies defeated the British in the Battle of Yorktown. In 1783, the war in America officially ended with the Treaty of Paris, as the British government accepted America's independence. Unfortunately, the treaty also meant that France had lost a large amount of land in America, too. It was decided that the only way we could stop being in debt was to raise the amount of tax people had to pay. And for the first time, people from the first and second estates had to start paying tax. It was a move that did not help me to become more popular. In the meantime, our third and fourth children were born. Sadly, out of the four children, only one lived to adulthood. I had not given up my wish to make other religions legal, and in 1787 I signed the Edict of Versailles, which gave people of other religions the same rights as Catholics. 2 years later, we produced a document called the Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen. Although women were not mentioned in the document, it said that men are born free and equal in rights. To me, that meant natural rights to security, property, liberty, and life. The role of government was to protect those rights. The First and Second Estates protested, as giving rights to the Third Estate threatened their own lifestyle and source of income. I was advised that it was time for a political meeting with representatives of all three estates. I was not sure this was the best action to take because I was king, and only I had the right to rule and make decisions. However, I agreed that it was the best option, and to the surprise of my people, an Estates General meeting was called on the 5th of May, 1789. The last time such a meeting had been called was in 1614. But unfortunately, the talks did not go as I had planned and were not a success. In the Third Estate were also all the middle classes, people who had their own businesses but were not members of the aristocracy or the church, and who felt they were being ignored. They were demanding that normal citizens should be able to vote for the people ruling the country. About 1,000 representatives were at the talks, but they could not agree among themselves. I was afraid that the Third Estate would start causing serious problems, and so I decided they should not be allowed any further part in our discussions. In answer to this, the Third Estate set up their own group, which they called the National Assembly. They declared their intention to create a constitution. Everyone in Paris wanted to be involved in making the new constitution, and they began complaining and protesting about what they thought was wrong with society. The people were becoming increasingly angry and were starting to demonstrate in the streets. I had to send in soldiers to keep order, which just made the people even more furious, and there was more violence. This was obviously a situation that I could not allow to continue. And on the 20th of June, I closed the Salle des Etats, where the Third Estate had their meetings. I didn't realize that my actions would start a revolution. On the 14th of July, the Bastille prison, where all the weapons were kept, was attacked by wild, angry people who set up a revolutionary government. A rumor, which was not true, had been started claiming that the aristocratic lords were going to murder the poor people on their lands. Instead of doing nothing, and tired of being afraid, the poor decided to take action. Violence spread across the country as aristocratic families were attacked and killed and their lands and riches taken away from them. In August, the Third Estate declared that the First and Second Estates should start paying taxes. And they also published their Declaration of Rights. They demanded that I and my family should come to Paris to face them and accept their National Assembly. In October, we did come to Paris. After a large, violent group of people threatened to attack us at Versailles. But it became very clear that we were not safe in Paris either. In June 1791, I decided that my family should try to escape by leaving France. We decided we would be safe in Austria, where my wife's family were, and we started our journey. However, we were discovered, caught, and brought back as prisoners to the Tuileries Palace in Paris. Many aristocrats were being guillotined, killed by a machine with a sharp blade that cut off their heads in the Place de la Concorde in the middle of Paris. And I knew that it wouldn't be long before the same happened to me and my family. I was right. I was accused and found guilty of treason. And on the 21st of January, 1793, I was led out for execution. No words could save me. And my only hope was that the murderers would not kill my family, too. The revolution could remove the royal family, but not the history and tradition we left behind us. As the guillotine came down, I shouted to the crowd, "Vive la France!"